Laugh Now, Die Later. On the road to the 100th episode, I like to call this I'm not calling it like seasons, like, oh, this is first season, second season, but I'm in a period at the point of this recording where I'm recording a bunch of episodes that will come out together, if that makes sense. And today my guest is a very special guest, because I feel like he hasn't done interviews, or like there's no podcast or any well-known interview, I guess, maybe besides one that we talked about earlier. But, you know, an in-depth interview that I'm pretty sure a lot of people want to listen to. The man behind Hoax Command. How you doing, sir?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Hitting you up, I was like, there's certain people that I hit up that don't respond, that I already expect to not reply. On HL, I was like, oh, man, I don't know if he's going to do it, but I'm glad we're doing this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're gonna get right to it. Starting from the beginning, you're from St. Louis, Missouri. How was that?
Honestly, I loved it. Kind of at the time growing up, I didn't know anything else.
I mean, we need to take a break.
No. So I liked it. I grew up in St. Louis County, or my family moved there when I was in second grade. My parents are both from the East Coast. My mom's from Massachusetts, and my dad's from New York. And they ended up in St. Louis. My dad was took a position at Washington University, so. He's a scientist, and he was really immersed. He still that's his.
Yeah. Like a science geek.
Yeah, like a lot of when you think of a scientist, you're aloof but really smart. Like this Jewish guy with huge thick glasses. Like very kind of classic scientist. And
what was your family like a typical suburb family with brothers and sisters, like nice life, or was there like a lot of problems? Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I've got one younger sister. She lives in Washington, D.C. We see each other. We're not super close, but I really like, respect her. And she, maybe that's a good way to put it. I liked growing up in St. Louis. My parents were really immersed in their own work world. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any connection to St. Louis. They didn't like anything any of my parents or any of my friends' parents liked. You know what I mean? Okay. It would just be like, you know what I mean? They didn't fully not have friends, but like, it wasn't
They gave you freedom, if that makes sense.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I had a lot of freedom by the time I was in high school, they were both really, or like end of middle school, they were both really immersed in their own work and stuff. So for me, that translated into a lot of freedom. For my sister, it meant like a kind of unwanted independence sort of thing, where she was in the throes of what's like, you know, the worst of the worst of like weird middle class Midwestern suburban culture, and she got super fucking depressed, and I really regret not like being there more for her. I guess I just didn't really know what was going on, and I was out doing all kinds of dumb shit and like getting into punk and like having this world of stuff open up to me, and she was, you know, like
she just wanted to be seen.
Yeah, she would like be skip school every Monday, like crying or being sick and stuff. And when you know, my family moved back to Massachusetts when I was 18, and I stayed in St. Louis for another year. And when I saw her, I stayed in touch with her actually really well. Some of the best we've ever stayed in touch that year. She moved to Massachusetts, where she immediately came out and like to her friends, her new friends. She had friends for the first time. And like, it was just like, she was like a self-actualized human and like had this opportunity not to be around like this sort of conservatism that like, I grew up not noticing, you know what I mean? Like I didn't, you know, I knew it was like, I knew that there was something else, 'cause I could tell my parents looked down on my, not looked down on, but like, you know what I mean? There was something up.
Yeah.
I knew there was something up, but I went like full native and like really embraced growing up in St. Louis and had a rat tail and made a lot of friends and was into like monster trucks and shit. And they were like, you know, just thought I was like kind of a fuck up.
Okay. Did you ever try in school? Like, or did you even try like to even try in school, if that makes sense? Like, or were you always kind of like, fuck this, like kind of free spirited, if that makes sense?
I don't know that I was free spirited. I think I was like really insecure and shit. Okay. But school was easy for me. You know, I had, like everyone in my family was like really smart, you know, like everyone was like reading around. Yeah, I just grew up surrounded by books and, and smart shit. My grandparents were smart as fuck. Like,
would you say you're smart genetically, if anything?
Yeah, it's only because of genetics. I can't take any credit for this.
Oh, okay, well, you would say you're smart. So you start getting in high school. Your parents leave. Who do you stay with, or why do you not decide to leave with them?
Oh, I mean it. So when, I guess we're kind of skipping over learning about underground music.
Okay, yeah.
But
maybe
that will make a better segue, because the reason why I didn't leave with them is I had gotten involved in a DIY space that had been booking the majority of the hardcore shows going on in St. Louis during my junior and senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And that was something I felt like I could get involved with, you know, and like be more involved, as opposed to like
just existing.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I wanted to make friends. I wanted to like do something cool.
Did you not have friends outside of punk?
Yeah, no, I had friends outside of punk, but I didn't feel particularly close to some of them, or like I would be like disagree with them or not. It's like when you're a kid, I think you have to like think of ways to make these distinctions that disappear or like get summed up a little bit when you grow up. And for me, I remember when I was like 14 or 15 thinking like if people were deep or not. Like, are you deep?
Okay.
Like I wanted to know, like, could you, like, are like, do you have feelings? Do you like cry by yourself? Do you want to? Do you do fucked up shit and don't tell anyone about it? Do you like
who are you? Who are you really? If that makes sense.
Yeah, or like, what? Like, is anything even in there?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Like, you can't possibly be fucking satisfied with this, or like, like what are you?
Yeah, yeah.
Like what? I don't know. I mean, I just didn't. And I think that sort of like presented is just sort of like low key prurience when I was a bit younger.
Yeah.
And then when I was in eighth grade, my mom had a friend who knew of a summer camp that they thought would be a good idea for me to go to.
Was it because you were doing bad stuff already and you were getting caught, or what do you think they wanted to do?
I think they were genuinely like, okay, this might be something that would be like a positive experience.
Yeah.
But I met kids from Boston and Philadelphia and New York whose families were like similar to my family. Like they were kind of like the first Jewish people I'd ever met. They were the first people I knew who like grew up with some of the same like their parents read them books that I had been read to by my, just like, you know, like things that like I didn't really have that same kind of relate. I didn't relate to the other.
Yeah.
And that I think was like my mind, you know, and I had been trying desperately to get into punk for probably 2 or 3 years at that point. You know, this is the summer after eighth grade.
Yeah.
There was this fucking cro-mag of a dude who went to my middle school. He was like, you know, I was like in sixth grade and he was in eighth grade, and like I weighed 95 pounds soaking wet and like was 4'11" and this dude was like 6'5" and had like a full beard, you know what I mean?
Shit.
And like a more like XL shirt. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like weird, like puberty hits at different times or whatever. Yeah. And I just remember like just trying to like memorize every t-shirt that he would wear. And it would be like he had a new t-shirt every week, and it would be like a Korn shirt or a Soulfly shirt or a Less Than Jake shirt. It was like pan.
Yeah.
Discount bin Hot Topic, like late 90s kind of like bigger, I don't know what you would call that band.
Rock bands.
Rock, yeah. Yes. But like, you know, left of rock. Like, yeah. Like
harder rock.
Harder rock. Yeah. Like you might, I didn't know, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Dylan wasn't playing on the radio that much that I was listening to, you know?
Yeah.
Like there was one sick rock station in St. Louis called The Point, and I went to that when I was around that age, like fifth or sixth grade. It was like the first live music I'd ever seen. I saw like a couple pop punk bands, and I was like, okay, this is like, all right, like maybe this is more like, I didn't even know what I was looking for, really.
Yeah.
You know, like I had these like, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
you go to summer camp, and then
these guys, they were like, oh, dude, let me,
put you on.
Yeah, they were like, these bands all suck. This is so whack. You can't possibly like this shit.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
And then, and this kid, Zach Summit, made me a mixtape of, like, just, like, 60 punk songs that were all over the place. It was like, Charles Bronson was on the tape. Oh, Brother Inferior was on the tape. Oi Polloi was on the tape.
Oh,
the Unseen was on the tape. Capitalist Casualties was on the tape. Dead Milkmen.
Yeah.
You know, like a bit of
everything. It was a good, yeah, that sounds like a good tape.
So. Toxic Narcotic. It was a great tape. Oz Rotten. And I think like that was like one by one I started like going through those bands, and like within the first couple months of high school, I had managed to download tracks from all those bands off LimeWire and had a better idea of maybe what was out there, but still a little bit, I don't know what. But those kids like that, I stopped taking, you know, like, coming back to St. Louis, I couldn't possibly take, like high school and the weird shit that, like, was going on in my high school series. You know, I was just like, all right, well, I'm the only person like me in this whole fucking school.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you're in high school and your parents leave, and then you're like, I'm not leaving because...
It was right at the end of high school, so... I started trying to seek out punk at that point and found what was a burgeoning kind of really rich underground punk adjacent kind of scene, really pan underground scene in St. Louis and the surrounding counties. And it was small, but it was like really vibrant and a lot of talented people participating from like 2000, whatever this was, like to when I left in 2005. And
is that place still there?
The venue?
Yeah.
The scene, I think, is what that was maybe the peak of its poppin'ness, 2005 or 6, and it continued with some other stuff that I would hear about after I left. And now there's actually a podcast that I listened to a little bit that I thought was really cool about that this guy who he was in a band called Kami Chung and does interviews people who were like part of that scene and talks about what it was made it special. But it was cool because it was similar to like I wasn't ready to commit to any, or like I didn't have that feeling of like I am punk or like hardcore, that's my shit. Like I was more like looking for like what
is that?
Like what's where can I get the thing that like makes your
stomach
inside feel like noodles and like it really give me something, you know, like. And you know, every show is a mixed bill, basically, so you would see a lot of, you know, you could see, like, a weird indie, and people booked all over the place, too, like, the place that I eventually sort of, like, stayed in was a part of, they were like at like, you know, VFW halls or Elks Lodge or some Denny's or YMCA, like all these weird ass places, or Battle of the Bands. We like try to get like a punk band that we liked on a Battle of the Band. Some shit like that. I don't.
Did you stay there and live with them, or like with the community, or like, why did you like, where did you stay at after your parents left? Once you were like involved in the scene.
Yeah. So there was this guy who he was like an older dude who was like into politics, which also was like I think a big part that sort of led me into punk music specifically, is I wanted, you know, it was my freshman sophomore year was 9/11, and that was like kind of that was
revolutionary.
Yeah, totally, especially in Missouri, where it was like, you know, like, what the fuck are you doing, like, walking, like, dudes, like, marching around their lake in Eureka, Missouri with, like, guns being, like, just in case any terrorism, or, you know what I mean, like, all this kind of, like,
all nuts.
It was totally nuts. I mean, St. Louis is different, but, you know, even the world of St. Louis that, St. Louis is real segregated, like, really, you know, it's like, when I say I'm from St. Louis, what I really mean is I'm from like 20% of St. Louis. Okay. Because I didn't even know about the other 80%, okay, like when I lived there. Like afterwards, I learned more about it. But like, you know, my, like the schools I went to were real, they were 99% white. You know, like.
Did you ever get hate because you were Jewish? Or if people found out?
I didn't really talk about it.
Oh, but no one ever found out? Or, like, because of your last name?
No.
Or no one ever found out? No.
Yeah, my last name's Sains. It's like an Ellis Island name when my, you know, great-grandparents came over. It turned from something like Senjin is Skinowski or something. And, okay. And they, like, just were like, oh, it's Sains.
Okay. All right, so, how'd you come over how'd you get in contact with what's his name that brought you here to LA?
Oh, Cali. I met him in Chaos and Chaos, like around 2011 or something.
At a fest.
Do you know Chaos and Chaos?
No.
It was a fest that ran from. I don't even remember the first one is. Maybe 2000 and mid-2000s till 2000, I want to say 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Maybe 2013 was the last one.
Yeah.
And it's like I think you can get credited as like the first like fest to really like articulate the hardcore punk to like mainstream indie pipeline.
Yeah.
So it was like a hardcore fest or whatever, but they would have metal, you know, and it got more so every year. They were like techno projects and a bunch of noise shit and like metal bands, and it was like huge. It went for like 4 days, hundreds of bands.
Oh shit.
All DIY. I mean, it was totally epic. One year I drove straight from Massachusetts to Chaos and Chaos, like pissing in bottles style.
Oh shit.
To see Bastard play.
Oh, okay.
And it was one of the coolest shows I'd ever seen.
Chaos and Chaos was where? Sorry.
In Austin, Texas.
In Austin, Texas.
Yeah, it was booked by a team helmed by Timmy Hefner.
Okay.
Sort of legendary Austin promoter, record collector, all around.
Oh, sexy. Is he still around? Guy.
Is he still around?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he moved, that sort of, when Chaos ended, he sort of segued into full-time, like, artist management and shit.
I didn't look into that.
Oh, yeah, you should look at all the Chaos and Chaos flyers, too, because you'll just be like, you know, like, it would be crazy, because you could go see, like, now this sounds normal or whatever, but in 2010 it was like really impressive to me that you could go like see Backtrack and then walk to see Wolf Eyes and then go see Total Control and then come back and see whatever, like,
okay, that sounds
aspects cool. of War, like bun, like crust, like Uber crust,
yeah,
sort of thing.
Sounds kind of sick. Yeah.
It was really sick. Yeah, that was a really long time. I'll fast forward through all this Boston shit, but I lived in Massachusetts for 10 years and then moved out to, or like 8 years, and then moved out to LA. And I met these guys, this one guy, Cali, at Chaos and Chaos, who was a really interesting dude. I knew nothing about him. He had done some art for Youth Attack, which is a record label that
I know had, that. That's it. That's a cool thing.
Yeah. He had done some stuff for Youth Attack. You know, and always Youth Attack, my favorite part was the art and design, where like I was feeling that some kind of way before I listened to the track.
Yeah.
You know, like I think when I started, I don't, yeah, like it was just like,
this is hard.
Presentation is everything. Like, you, it's like,
amen, yeah.
You can do so much by putting just the right foot forward, or being the thing, being
right, art
being
writing.
Looked at the way that you need to be. It was just really effective.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think I understand that it's like, oh yeah, it's like good design. But
yeah.
I think, A, that's not what he thought at the time either. He was like trying to like, you know, do mind control shit.
Hmm. Yeah. And so you did Hoax Wait, did you do Hoax before coming out to LA?
So Hoax started in 2010 and was over by 2013, basically. We had...
Oh, you guys are best for 3 years?
Yeah.
Holy shit, and because I know you guys are, like, pretty big. Well, like, yeah, you guys are, like, one of the biggest punk bands of the last, like, 20 years?
Well, you know, I think it's really... It's crazy, but, you know, I think maybe big in what, like, you maybe, like, a...
Like, people know Hoax.
Right.
Like, there's punk bands that you only name punk people, they'll know. And you tell them to hardcore kids, they don't know what that is. But you tell a hardcore kid, same thing, like, if there's some hardcore bands that you tell a punk kid, like, oh, do you know this hardcore band? They're like, I don't know. But if you could get across to other subgenres, just because people know about you, they don't even have to like you, I feel like that's a big band.
Well, kind of like St. Louis, you know, when we started as a band, we started in, like, this area of, like, towns in western Massachusetts, a very rural area, but with five colleges around. So it's, there's, you know, because of the colleges, a lot of young people, active people, people doing shit, but a high turnover. It's one of those places where, like, you know, people moved to after leaving New York.
Yeah.
You know, okay, like, it's like Thurston Moore moved there to have a family with, you know, like, it's kind of like that sort of place. But, and there were hardcore shows, but, you know, like, but there was a lot of other stuff. You know, it's not like there was, like, here, where you can go to three hardcore shows a week. And, I don't know where this fits in the timeline, but I didn't, like, once I started going to shows outside of St. Louis, and I saw how you could have massive amounts of people who all looked the same and acted the same, and, like, you just had to adhere to these sort of, like, styles and tastes and culture, and you could be part of this ocean of people. It was like joining, I don't know, it was like, I really liked, like, the...
Joining, like, a giant army or cult.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know. It was like, you could... There was a lot of power in it, or something. Not, like, a necessarily good power. Like, I mean, I'm not saying, like, oh, it's, like, really meaningful. But it was, like... Like, I remember going to, like, the first show I ever went to, like, that had, like... It was, like, a hardcore show or whatever, but it was, like... There were 500 kids there. It was at some church in Alston in like, 2005 or something. And I was just, like, holy fucking shit, this is so cool. You know, like... I've been to, like, 311 concerts or whatever, but, like, it wasn't the same. Or I'd been to, like, a packed show in St. Louis, but I didn't know, like... It was always, like, questioning the authenticity. I don't know what you would call it.
Yeah.
But it's like, you're like, dude, okay, everyone's, like, going off to this hardcore band, but, dude, like, you guys are all into, like, all different shit. Like, I want it to be... what I wanted to see was, like, single thought control... My, like, herd mentality, like, that kind of, like, I don't know, it's like chaos in a way. It's, like, really, and, like, that was, like, that really appealed to me when I started going to Boston. It was, like, an army of people who kind of looked the same, acted the same, were all into the same shit, were down to do stuff together. They all had, like, crappy little apartments and just, like, I don't know, like, I started really tepidly trying to meet people on the Bridge 9 board, and, you know, it took, like, no time at all, and then made a bunch of friends, and actually another, just to give them credit, this band Bones Brigade from Boston came through St. Louis, sort of at the peak. Have you heard of them?
No.
They're like what we would now call wacky thrash, but it's like, you know, thrash and hardcore and subject matter that has to do with...
Like Rival Mobbish?
No. They would... No.
All right, that's what I'm assuming.
Like, you know, like, it's like... like flip brim hats and burritos and skateboards and shit and like were skateboard, you know, I don't know. They covered like Metallica though I think now if you listen to it, it sounded incredibly dated, but I think at the time that was like, they were like, you know, the, you know, if things had been different, they probably would have been like a municipal waste or whatever, but now, but then they were, you know, just one in a sea of many municipal waste. But they were really nice to me when they played in St. Louis, and I was, they had a roadie named Anthony Hook, who was the man, and he, broke his leg or something on the end of that tour. So when I went up to Boston and I kicked it with him a bunch, and then went, that like took his place on Bones Brigade European tour, and that was like a bit of my like sort of like beat, like I don't know, made to conform a bit more to like the your regular hardcore kid or whatever. Like I figured they like, you know, through a combination of being generous and being bullies, like, helped me figure out how to act the way.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
That I could to be a hardcore kid and sort of immerse myself in this world and not have to think about other problems, which I didn't do for several years.
and Hoax, how did you... did the band come together, or did you bring people together? Or was it you, like, I want to start a band, like, who could play?
So I was in the, like, the timing of, like, so I, those, all those, that scene of people was in Boston, all, like, Eastern Mass, and then in the fall I started college in Western Massachusetts. That's the rural area, you know, like it's small space. Yeah, and I knew that there was one band that had members that went to one of the colleges out in Western Mass, and they were called Youth Liberation Front.
That's kind of cool name.
It's, you know, a great name, right?
Yeah.
And that guy was this guitarist who I recognized one day in like a school store. We didn't go to the same school, but he was like at the school, and
he's like, what's up?
I recognized him.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, what's up? You're Ian from Youth Liberation Front. And that's Ian, who now is, you know, he played guitar in Hoax and plays guitar in Command. And
oh, he also plays guitar in Command?
Yeah, he played, yeah.
That's sick, yeah.
Yeah, that was him. So I met him, and we were friends for years. And then he moved to Buffalo, and I stayed in Massachusetts. And both of us started. He was in this band called Aerosols. That was my, like, everyone lived in different cities at that point, and we had an idea for this band. Basically, both of us were insanely depressed, and we were like, why don't we start this band? And he moved back from, he was going to grad school in Buffalo, and moved back to Massachusetts when we wrote the demo that summer.
Hmm.
That was.
How many releases did you guys have? Yeah, you guys had a lot for 3 years.
The idea was to do a demo, 3 7-inches, and an LP. And it got extended. We did a 4th 7-inch because it ended up being like part, like, you know how it is. Like, someone books your tour, you do a 7-inch to, like, for their label.
Yeah.
You know? So we did that with La Vida SMUs and did a fourth 7-inch that was just, like, I think a 2-song, you know, it was like a promo for the LP on a 7-inch, but both those songs are on the LP. And then at some point in there, we did a split with a noise artist named Stone Leather. That I knew, he's just like a really charismatic guy, and I knew him through the world of other weird extreme music. You know, I was part of being from St. Louis, but the part that we skipped over is I'm being really into like other types of music that were not punk growing up in high school.
What was like noise and like?
Yeah, a lot of noise and like kind of like free jazz, like stuff like extended technique type of music, like music where it would be like some weird setup, maybe not all electronic, and it would be kind of like a, you know, in this DIY space.
Okay, I know.
It'd be something else to engage me besides the sound or whatever. Like, there was a lot of, like, I don't know what to call this kind of music, but, like, music with, like, dudes who they're like, playing, like, a tour where they're, like, 12-hour drives between all their tours. They all have beards, and, like, it's really slow, and I just couldn't stand any of that shit. Like, I just fall asleep during shows all the time.
Oh, shit.
But if there was something cool going on, or like there's like a key I could get into it.
Yeah, can you try your best to explain a noise? Like for what? Because I've heard a lot of people like, why do you like noise? Or a lot of people don't understand the appeal, and I don't personally kind of I like the visuals and I like the aesthetic and I like the idea, but if you were telling me listen to noise, I kind of wouldn't get it.
Yeah, but you know, people say like that about hardcore.
That's very true.
You know, it's the same thing. It's like that, or it's like, you know, there's like, I guess I think about all these kinds of music is like essentially like, it's like folk music. Uh-huh. Like, you know, it's music that's like, emerges, like comes out of like a really specific time or place or set of conditions. Or things that, like, they don't ask for progress to be made on them, right? Like, you're not listening to hardcore and being like, I want you to, like, really turn this on its head and, like, add a saxophone. And what if there was, like, like a choir part? It's like, as soon as you start deviating from the genre, it loses a lot of what, like, makes it special in the first place. Like, it's if you abandon all these things that are, like, part of what the music is, it doesn't have that, you know, it's like all that shit isn't like contained in the notes. It's not like you like play a riff and you're like, okay, I'm like fucking, like, you know, it's like,
I get what you're saying.
You learn these things. It's like socially uh-huh. It's not popular music. It's music that comes from people who identify with this like context or like whatever it is. And you can get into, I liked when you talked to Sam Boston, and he was, I forget what he said, like some kind of, I think it was reggae or something. That was like one of the first musics that I got into. It was like digital dance hall, that like that, where you start hearing it and you're like,
it just switches.
I like start to get it. Kind of get what they're into. Or like when we were talking about earlier about like the, where you're like, how the fuck did all you guys decide that this is, like, a good band? Mm. Like, why did they sound any different from that band? Like, what is it? Like, if you don't know anything about it, you haven't heard it, or you don't hear, you don't have these frames of reference, it doesn't make any sense.
Mm.
You know, like, when you try to describe a band without comparing them to other bands, you're really, you're stuck to, like, saying these words where you don't know if other people are, like, thinking the same thing as you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where you're like, okay, but I said like, it's really like heavy and hard or whatever, and I can be thinking, oh yeah, like Sun, and you're like, no man, like Hatebreed, or I don't, you know, like
yeah.
Trying to think of the most dumb version.
Yeah,
of this,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
but like,
that's
like,
yeah, I get you.
Whatever. I guess the noise thing is just to say like you're. It just happened to be as popular as a lot of other shit when I was growing up, and it had a lot of things.
You think Noid is still popular now? Compared
to different stuff, I think Noise now, what is a bit different about it than in the early 2000s is that those kind of genres, there was a lot more room for new stuff to come out of Noise. Whereas now, I think if you're trying to be like experimental and break boundaries playing Noise, you're doing it as wrong as someone who's like trying to add a saxophone to a hardcore band.
Ooh.
You know, you're just doing something that no one's asking for and is like moving away from what makes it appealing to the devotees who are really into that in the first place.
Interesting.
And I think those people are smart. Like, when you talk to people on your podcast who know the whole encyclopedia of hardcore from beginning to end, those are like really rich minds, you know. Yeah. Like they're preserving something that's like important. It's like it's a knowledge that you can kind of learn it on your own, but you have to say it out loud for it to really stick and become history. And I think that has happened a lot. Finished happening in Noise.
Okay.
Within my lifetime.
Okay.
Where now, if I think that I don't want to see someone do something that is experimental.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, all the experiments have been done. If you have a hypothesis you're trying to test, do the research. You'll find it. Oh, you want to know what playing feedback for 30 minutes sounds like? It's been done. There's no experiment that needs to be carried out. Like, you should probably know who did that first and think if you really are adding something new to that sound by doing it again. Not as well, or in another context where, you know, no one gives a fuck the same way that they did if you were doing that in the 70s.
Okay. And so why did Hell 10?
I mean, it was a really... that was like the plan, I think. I mean, that was the plan from the beginning, I think, is the easiest answer. We're going to do a demo, 3/7 inches, and LP, and then finish.
And one thing, I mean, I know you might disagree, but one thing is that Hoax Live, was very, very shocking, but you could see, I mean, I never saw Hoax Live, but from the videos.
No?
Yeah, I never saw it. I mean, I was too young.
Yeah.
I was probably in sixth grade when Hoax was popular. Yeah, I was in fourth grade when Hoax was, like, popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, was active, and I could just see, like you could tell when a band is trying to be controversial and when a band is just like, oh, this was just like, you know, just like, it's like naturally crazy. One thing you did is push people or like hit people that got close to you. Did that ever escalate to something like worse, or like after the show it's like, fuck you, dude, like, why'd you hit me, or did it lead to anything bad? If that makes sense. Quote unquote bad.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It was always annoying.
Oh, so it did happen a lot.
No, I mean, it happened a couple times. I think that, you know, it wasn't like... I don't know. I think most of the people, like, they want... You know, I don't know, like, our first shows were all, like, in our small town, and not a lot of people knew what to expect, or, like, and I wanted... We were playing the band. We were making the band that we wanted. Me and Ian knew what we wanted to do. We wanted to do this band. We had an opportunity to do this band. Seemed like a good thing, so, or like that we could try and do it. I'd never been in a band before, so it felt like extremely high stakes for me. Like, you know, here I've been this like fucking tag-along loser who, like, didn't really get it, like, kind of, like, poser for, like, my whole fucking life, and finally get to be in, like, a cool hardcore band. I wanted to fucking make the most of it, man.
Damn. That's kind of beautiful, though. So, damn. Did it ever happen while the band was playing, someone, like, got mad? Or was it always after?
Yeah, one time...
I mean, I appreciate it. It's a cool story.
Okay. One time we got in a fight in Lyon, France, and that was...
Oh, shit.
It sucks. I really have a bad memory of a lot of this stuff kind of thing. I mean, there was endless, like, stupid confrontations, but it's like I wasn't really interested in... It didn't... Yeah, I can't... I think a lot of people, like, dude, like, my girlfriend got pushed, or like, some... I still don't even know what the response is. Like, yeah, that's like...
So what do you want me to do? Like, don't go to the front?
I guess. I don't know that I, like, think that way now, necessarily. You know, I think a lot of the enjoyment... I don't know, man. I don't really know.
Well, can you tell the story of France or what happened?
Oh, yeah. Just, I guess the thing that I want to say is, like, I've never gotten in a fight in L.A. I feel like I'm being hosted here a lot of the times in the punk scene. You know, like, this is a scene that belongs to other people, and, try and... be a respectful guest.
Yeah, be civil, yeah. What happened in France?
And it's bigger here, you know? Like, most other scenes are not like this, you know? It's like...
Everything bleeds to other things. Because, like, Santa Ana punks are one thing. Or like, and then, like, Orange County, Santa Ana. But then there's, like, the... Well, I don't know if it's just now. You could tell me if, like, it was always been like this, but, like... Like, I understand there's a difference between, like, hardcore and punk kids, right? But then, like, hardcore kids, there'd be, like, a... Like, more of a DIY hardcore kid, and then be, like, the pro, like, hardcore shows. And then there'd be, like, the in-between hardcore shows. And then there's bands that are kind of, like, hardcore now that are, like, mixed with other things, with, like, metal, but they're, like, into the hardcore crowd. And then there's, like, punk. There's, like, a... I feel like, in my opinion, in my eyes, I know it all goes together. There's, like, four different punk scenes. Like, there's, like, the Santa Ana punk scene, like, the more Mexican, like brown, Spanish-speaking some bands, and then there's, like, more of, like, older punk scene, and then there's, like, the, like PC punks, you know what I mean? Like, that's a thing.
Yeah, and, totally.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, in other, like, growing up, and in the vast majority of shows that Hoax ever played, they're in places that don't have the numbers to have these distinct scenes. You have a room with all 50 people who've ever even heard of punk from a 100-mile radius converging in this place to see whatever it is that's going on.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, never... It was only in places like New York or L.A., I would say the only places in the world that we ever played were, like, New York and L.A., where we would even be conscious of, like, what kind of...
What are we going to do?
Or... yeah, I don't know.
Are we going to present ourselves? How to say it.
No, that was already pretty... That was always pretty consistent, you know?
Or be, like, cautious of, like, who's in the room?
Or, like, where you would think about it as, like, what kind of show is it going to be? You know, like, for most of the country, it's just, like, an extreme underground music show.
Mm-hmm. Like, okay.
You know, like, the crowd would have all of those types of people in it.
Yeah.
In the same room. And that room really only had 30 people in it.
Yeah.
So, like, I get what you mean, like, oh, it's, like, a big band or whatever. But it's, like, you've had... Like, I don't even know what pro hardcore is exactly, but, like, I do, you know? Like, but that didn't exist when I was in high school, really. Yeah. Like, I don't know who I would count as that. Like, they were, like, kind of, like, pop punk bands that I think were, like, whatever. They were, like, condoned by hardcore. You know, things like Kid Dynamite or, like, Nunmo Black or...
Yeah.
Like, they were pretty big, I guess, or...
I feel like now if you're a big hardcore band, you're in a big... You're like, you have a big crowd. But before...
And you have professional management, you have, like, you have someone booking your shows, you have a promoter.
Yeah.
That...
Now you could be a hardcore band and not need that and still have big crowds, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like Madball, like...
But they for sure have, like, a booking...
No, yeah, but, like, it's, like... Well, yeah, I guess.
And that, exactly, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, that was like the pro hardcore when I was a kid. It's like Madball. But Silly would only play kind of like, you know, it was bigger than the DIY. They wouldn't play a DIY venue, but they'd be playing a rock club in St. Louis. I never saw a Madball in St. Louis.
Hoax ends. You guys did what you got to do. And did you not do anything for the rest of the time, like until Command? Like bands-wise?
Yeah, no other bands, but I did a bunch of electronic music.
Yeah, but what is the name under?
In 2014, I did two demos. One was called Fihel, and one was called Leavestud.
Okay.
And I still do Leavestud. It's like an industrial noise project. And Fihel turned into a project called JH1 FS3 that I did with my partner at the time, this woman from Denmark who was doing a project that Hoax played with. We met at Chaos and Chaos, that festival that we were talking about.
Okay.
She was playing her noise set, and I was playing with Hoax, and we met, and, it's hit it off and stayed in touch, and then when I moved to L.A., there was a big connection between L.A. and... through Cali and this other weird shit that was going on with people from Copenhagen, so we had these opportunities to kind of see each other and lots of mutual friends and stuff, and we started dating and would spend time here together. When I moved here, I lived in Cali's studio downtown. It was like in Skid Row. It was just like it was like this, but five times the size. And there's a bathroom at the end of the hall, and that's like it. And I lived there for almost 2 years.
Excuse me. Yeah, damn.
Till I got like kind of on my feet. You know, like sort of figured out stuff. It was like Cali who hooked it up like that and was like just the best friend anyone could have. He's an AA guy. Like he was really into sponsoring people and did a lot of like, had a lot of like 12 step.
Did you personally deal with drugs or had problems with drugs?
I mean, I love dealing with drugs. I'll deal with them right now if we had some.
So you still have you ever like been nice over?
No. I mean, I like to drink moderately. It's never been. I was straight edge for a while.
Oh shit!
Like basically, by the time I left St. Louis, I was straight edge, and then. After living out in Western Mass for a little while, I just didn't have that like army of like hardcore automatons like around me all the time, so it felt less tenable. Like I wanted to have a little bit more
freedom.
Like broaden my horizons a little bit.
Yeah,
I guess this is kind of a big thing that I skipped over. Is like, so like I was like into like all these different types of music scenes, and like I was into hardcore, but like also a bunch of other different stuff. And hardcore really appealed to me, but it still was like in parallel with a bunch of stuff. And when I moved in with this guy, sorry, no, it's cool. You can do you edit this?
Most of the time, no. If I'll send it to you if there's anything you want me to edit.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no problem.
Mm.
But.
Yeah, sorry.
I shouldn't have asked that online, right?
No. It's raw live, I guess.
All right, cool. Yeah, do it. Sip from Dino's on the mic.
Oh yeah, sir. Shout out to Dino's.
Yeah, shout out to Dino's on Main Street.
thank you. So yeah.
And when I moved there, it was like this older guy who ran that DIY space. And he was into like art and like experimental music, like in the truest, like, you know, like composing, like really like, yeah, he's like a composer.
Yeah.
But he would compose things to play on like a broken cello with a shoe or whatever it is, you know, like abstract art kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he still like had this space and was into opening it up and having to be like this youth DIY space. But he was, I don't know how to really sum it up, but like basically I moved in with him.
Yeah.
And he, I got really, that was like when I went from kind of like low key, like, you know, basically having bouts of depression in high school and whatever, to like something really snapped and then like I fully just was completely, yeah, I don't know, it's just like I didn't, it predisposed me to when moving to Boston and I saw that what I could do was like blend into a crowd and completely fucking disappear and just be like an automaton and like still do all this fun shit and like could like focus on this one thing, which was like going to hardcore shows.
Mm.
I like snagged it. And then after a couple of years, I started like maybe like, not being so committed to just living within hardcore and not doing anything else outside of hardcore.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So now you're,
There's a really, that podcast, there was another guy who lived there with me at the same time, this kid, Steven.
Yeah.
And I've listened to him on a podcast where he was talking about the time that we were living together. And I think he did a really, he like stayed in St. Louis, you know, he didn't have somewhere to go.
Oh.
You know, I kind of knew that I was already going to move to Massachusetts,
yeah,
you know, whenever, yeah, like. So finally, when it got too bad for me, I just like bailed, you know, and I just like threw all my shit in this minivan, my minivan. I had a minivan my mom left me when they moved to Boston, and just left. And he stayed there, and I don't want to say it like fucked up his life, but you know, I think if.
If he would have left?
Yeah. I mean, I'm hard-pressed because I don't want to, like, put words in his mouth, and I listened to, like, what he said about that and shit, but, like, it was fucking full-on weird abuse shit. You know, it was, like, it was just, like, this old guy with, like, teenage boys living in his house who, like, he was, like, manipulating and controlling and, like, doing weird, like, emotional, like,
yeah,
control stuff, too. And, like, you know, we were, like, teenagers. And I think that we, like, really bought it, like, hook, line, and sinker. But then looking back, it's like, well, you don't do, like, that. Like, if I ever heard about a 17-year-old or something being treated the way that he treated the two kids there or whatever, like, I would just, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
it was just really crazy. And I think that, yeah, it was just really crazy.
It was the, so... the dull guy was a hardcore dude, or
no? He was a composer.
Okay, he was a composer. Oh, sorry, man. Sorry, I'm like, yeah, no, yeah. So he was a composer, and damn. Do you look back now and like, I don't know, like what happened to him now? Or how did all that break through, or did it, or eventually? I'm assuming it like stopped, or is he still there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that eventually the scene that was booking shows there had enough of him.
Mm. How long did he live there for?
I lived there for like a year.
A year?
Yeah.
Wow. Damn.
It was disgusting. It was like these three properties on a corner, and then the one of them was like the venue, which was like a... Do you see that corner store like up at the end of my block?
Like that.
Uh-huh. That was like the venue, but it was like on the corner, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's like a house on the one side of it and the house on the other side. And the one house had been a crack house, like just, you know, blighted urban area, all fucked up, and nothing was going on there. He was just boarded up. And there was another one that he had like kind of done the same thing but hadn't finished, and he moved into the bottom, and then me and that other kid started working on this other floor that was just like filled with trash. It was crazy. It was just like all...
Well, it's just fucked up.
It was just fucked up. There was like car doors in it, like dead birds, like...
Did it make you work for it, like, in order for you to like live with him?
Yeah, and everything. We would do everything. Like he would just tell... Like, I couldn't go see my girlfriend. I couldn't, like, I honestly don't even know how to talk about it. It was fucking crazy. And I had... There were kids in the scene who knew what was happening to me. And... I think they felt...
Scared?
Concerned, you know? Oh. Like, they were like... But it was like this kid that they didn't really like or, like, know that well anyway. So they didn't feel like it was, like, that for them to intervene or something.
Okay, pardon me if I'm too nosy here. But, I mean, I feel like was there ever, actual abuse? Like, did he try or anything like that?
Well, like, did he rape me?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Definitely never.
Do you think that was a plan or something, or
no? But I think it's part of like what makes it really hard is because I don't want to talk about like his sexuality or like make it be like that. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to imply that, or like you know you see this shit sometimes where it's like, attention all followers. I would like to bring to your attention some problematic thing. This guy is abuser, and they use all this language, and you're like left to be like. Do I fill in the blanks or like it's like difficult to like and I don't want to like do any of that, but I also know that it was like he profoundly, you know, like psychologically damaged these kids that he had unfettered access to. You know, there's like other kids who lived in like another building. You know, it was like no one was older than 20.
Yeah.
He was in his, like, 50s or 60s, and, like...
You know how he made you work on the buildings? Did he own the buildings or just took over them?
His mom owned them or something? So he was rich?
Or, like, had some sort of wealth?
Bro, do you know... No.
No,
it's,
no.
Like, those...
Not rich.
They were a liability. I mean, it's, like, in the early 2000s in South St. Louis City, you could buy a building for around $100.
Oh, shit. Okay.
You know, it's like, or the city would just give it to you if you pay the property taxes.
Okay.
You know, there's huge blight. Like, all these big cities around the Rust Belt, like, at first they were deindustrialized, and then real estate came in and threw in crazy, like, you know, racist fear-mongering and shit, flipped all these crappy suburbs to people fleeing the city, and then let the city get blighted and
have
an abandoned.
So what happened to that dude? Or do you know?
No, I mean I never talked to him again. I left, and that was it. I know that he kept on doing stuff there. Some people who had better experiences kind of did some stuff, but most people left. It was just weird, man. It was just this weird thing, and I don't really know how to, like, sum it up. And when you talk to people from St. Louis about it, they know exactly what you're talking about. You know, people who knew there... I don't know. There was enough people... I'll say this. There was enough people who were, like, looking out for me and lived in the neighborhood that, like... I never was, like... terrified for my life. You know what I mean? Like, But it was all, like, really weird psychological shit.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. And that, like, really sucked. You know, I was, like, I wasn't in band, so, like, I wasn't cool to him. And, like, but, like, I still, like, had this access to shit. And, you know, like, because I could go to shows or I lived at the venue. And, like,
yeah.
It felt like I would, like, lose something if I didn't. I don't know. Or you just like yell at me for hours and like, you know, tell me about how like I was, you know, like a lying, like damaged, you know, like suburban casualty, like my, like I'll never be okay, like I'll always be like a
fuck up.
Yeah, like a liar, like he always like said stuff like in terms of like politics and stuff, which was like part of like what it was like, you know, people would be like it, like they want to like get involved and maybe they're not so in, they don't know these encyclopedia of underground music histories. They just know it's like a culture that maybe aligns with some of their values.
Yeah.
And they have a better idea of what their values are. And he would like latch onto that and be like, oh, like I can get you past whatever the barriers to entry of these musics are. And okay. You just have to like get on board with my shit and then you'll know it or whatever. And it was like really appealing. So you would like host all these things that was like, no one cool ever, you know, I'm like, no one in cool bands ever came to
St. Louis
to, no, to his like house to talk with him or meet with him. But there were tons of kids who were like losers who like wanted a place inside this scene that they were like, oh, maybe I'll do this. Like,
okay.
I'm trying to think of like some aspect of LA that's kind of like that, where it's like, oh, like that's too lame, I don't want to do it, I'm just gonna go to hardcore shows, or I'm gonna just go do my own DIY thing. Like, why would I have a DIY venue that I'm gonna get involved with?
Okay.
There's nothing like this in LA, really.
Not really. I mean, I mean, it sounds crazy.
Well, because punk is so huge here, part of it. You know, yeah. It's like, it's just like surfing or like skateboarding. It's just like this thing that's like, the weather, it's just like there, and you can be into it or not, or
damn.
But I forget why I thought that was relevant at the time, but just to say, maybe I was like a couple years out of that, I broke edge and started listening to a lot of like dancehall and techno and hanging out with like hipster girls and stuff.
Oh,
and, you know what I mean? Like just trying to like be a little like just be normal a little bit, as opposed to just like fully like I don't do anything except for hardcore, and if it's not fast hardcore, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. Sorry. Did when you left, did you I gotta get out, or did he ever try to stop you or anything like that? Or like, did he know it was like you can't leave or you shouldn't leave or?
Basically, me and my friend Steven, who was living there at the same time, it just was like completely fucking untenable. We just did the craziest shit that it was like, it made sense in the context, but looking back, it would be like literally sneaking out of the house or like trying to like hide food under our beds and like having to lie or like make up all these like plans for like how to tell him that we had like gone and done something. It was just like, I don't know, man. Like, it was just like being in a really fucked up relationship almost.
Yeah. And you guys left at the same time or?
No, he stayed there and, you know, I feel like, honest to God, really lucky he's still alive. You know, like he like had no one and nothing and was like stuck there and like had alienated all his friends by like siding with this fucking.
He said this is on a podcast, right? Him talking about it?
Yeah.
What is it? Or can you send it to me if you don't want to put it on?
Yeah.
Please send it to me.
Okay. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think he does a better, less dramatic job of talking about it than I do. Because it's hard to talk about it. I think that is like, also like, you know, Missouri is like really fucking homophobic. And like, even though every punk scene is like slightly less homophobic than the culture at large, just by nature of punk or whatever, like, we were really concerned, I think, with, like, trying to say what we wanted to say without, like, having it devolve into some kind of, like, you know, homophobic trope about old... Yeah, I don't know, like, yeah, without it turning into some weird homophobic trope, which, like, wasn't necessarily true.
Okay.
You know, like, but what can I say? I mean, that was probably stupid. Yeah, he totally fucked me up.
Damn. So now you're, I guess to
wrap. I know we've skipped around a lot.
No. But the reason I go, like, in order is because I want the person themselves to, like, tell me what they want. Like, what they want to be, or, like, want their story to be told in a way. You know what I mean? Eventually, you know, that's the goal. Like, for the person to tell the story, whether it's in order or not. We're gonna get close to wrapping this up.
Fuck that. I was, like, stuttering and shit for the first 10 minutes. Like, you know, if you gotta be somewhere, that's fine. But I'm also think that, like, you could chop some shit that's, like, you know, boring or whatever.
No. I mean, I don't think anything you said is boring. Even when you would kind of, like, figure out what you were saying, you kind of said something that was like, holy shit, like
this one.
Yeah. So you're being closer to 36. You're
I'm 36.
Yeah. Oh, you're 36. Yeah. You're being closer to 40. Sorry. You're being closer to 40. You've done all this. You've been through shit, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, has it ever crossed your mind, maybe now or maybe before, or maybe in the future, who knows, to, like, live like a normal, like, suburban life? Like, to just have kids, to just get married with, like, a regular lady? Or do you feel like it's, like, not possible?
I mean, I feel like I'm doing a pretty good job.
Mm.
You know, like, that was, I think even, like, at the, towards the end of Hooks, I was having those kind of, like, existential questions, like, like, the dudes who I knew who were, you know, 10 years older than me, that were still involved in underground music, I was, like, I didn't really know anyone who, like, whose footsteps I would necessarily want to follow in.
Okay.
And I think that really started, like, getting, like, that was, it only got, you know, it didn't help being in Hooks. It, like, sort of, like, positive reinforcement for all my most negative tendencies. Kind of, you know, just, like, heighten the anxiety the longer it went on or whatever. And I don't think that I could have kept it up, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, moving out LA was sort of a part of maybe bridging that gap, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, so I know we already mentioned it, but so Cali was like, okay, you come out. I mean, I was working on a fucking corn farm before I moved to, I was, like, tutoring kids in the SATs and working on this farm where I did pumpkins, corn, and tobacco.
Do you have to be certified to teach kids for the, like, to prepare for the SAT, or?
No, you just need to be able to get perfect scores on the SAT.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Which I know it sounds like, when you take the SAT when you're 16, it's really hard. When you take it,
yeah,
when you're, like, 22, yeah, it's, like, not that hard. Like,
yeah, I know.
Fuck, I can't believe this shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just did that basically for really long. Like, I graduated college, and, like, I wanted to be a doctor, I kind of thought. Like, I thought that would be sick.
Oh, sorry, what did you graduate of?
What?
What was your bachelor's, or what did you graduate of?
Oh, just Bachelor of Arts, like a generic degree. You know, I didn't get like a degree in a certain thing. It was like I went to like a liberal arts school. Yeah, but then I couldn't fucking imagine spending that much more time in school and being surrounded by people who I thought were like one dimensional and boring. You know, it seemed like I had to choose between like doing what I wanted to do and like that kind of security, and I fully chose doing what I wanted to do. And then like, you know, when I finished school, like, was that's like when the great, that's like when the economy tanked, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like my last year of school was like no one I knew got a job. You know, it's like, and I felt really bad for a lot of kids who like took out like loans and shit to like go to college, and then like they're trying to like get that, they were all like they had like political science degrees and were like working at Chinese restaurants until they were like almost 30, you know. It really sucked. But so it made it a bit of an easier decision.
Did your parents, through all this whole time, throughout everything, ever reached out or like, what the hell is going on with you? Like, or like, reached out or like knew about what you were like, what was going in your life, or know about Hoax to this day? Or
they know about Hoax, and I think that they were like, you know, it's like a combination. I think they like a little bit knew about it and didn't like it, and but also wanted, they liked the idea of me achieving things, or like not being like a total fuck up. Like they want, like, so I knew how to, I knew how to talk to them about all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think they hadn't, yeah, you know, just be like, mom, like I'm in the, they knew what hardcore was, you know, cause I'd been like going to hardcore shows all the time, and I would tell them like, oh, it's like, I'm straight edge. And they thought it was really cool that I was straight edge and shit like that. And
well, when you were living with the dude, did he ever like, I mean, did your parents ever like
meet him or anything?
Yeah. Or like call you to be like, yo, are you okay? Or for that whole year, did they just not know him?
Yeah. But you know, I didn't want to like, I think they were like, dude, like, go to college. Or, like, go, like, do, like, what, like, I don't, they were, honestly, I think that at that point, they were just glad I graduated high school. They thought that I wasn't going to finish high school, so they were just like, he made it. And then they didn't have to deal with me anymore. Discipline.
Are your parents still together?
Yeah.
And, damn.
Yeah, they're.
Do, like, you have a so good relationship with them, or, like.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, pretty, yeah. It, like
standard.
I think standard.
Yeah.
I think standard. But you were saying, like, I think. Anyways, I just wanted to get to give Callie some credit for how I bridged that gap from, which was, so I met Callie at Chaos and Taos, and he knew a lot of. He's kind of immersed in art world stuff back here.
I knew
here.
Him through there, yeah. I had no idea he was, like, into punk.
Yeah. I mean, he worked at this. This is kind of funny. All right. So he worked at this music licensing place on Melrose called Beta Petrol, owned by the guy. Have you ever seen that book, Fucked Up and Photocopied? It's like a Bible of U.S. Flyers and like early zines from the 80s. It's sick. That guy owned that, and he had a little record label that he ran out of this music licensing office, where the soon to be wife of Mark McCoy was the girl who worked at the front desk.
Oh shit.
And he had spent like basically 13 years. He probably quit working at the music licensing place in 2015 or something, or right 14, right after I moved out here or whatever. But it worked there for a really long time, and that's what sort of bridged his life from being a roadie for Hole and this dude who was like on tour with Nirvana and like babysat for Francis Bean, and really crazy early 20s to say the least. And then just did all this like, yeah, like a
all cool shit. Yeah.
He worked there and, like, went to AA and rode his bike and had a chill girlfriend and just, like, had this really focused life doing this normal thing, and he, like, achieved this kind of, like, inner peace that, like, I think I met him at, like, the peak of that sort of, like, state of being kind of thing, and it was really helpful. So he was like, dude, you're gonna die if you keep on doing this band. Ian's already moving out to LA. Come out to LA, I'll help you. Like, I know you don't have any money, you can live in my studio until you get on your feet. I've always really liked art, so I always loved art, and it just seems like unattainable because I'm not an artist, so like, what would I do with it? The same way it's like, okay, well, I'm not in that band, I want to play.
Yeah.
I like hardcore, what do I do? Oh, I'll like move to a venue, or like I'll do a venue, you know what I mean? Like, and he set me up and got me a job doing assistance for artists and stuff. And I've been doing that for 10 years and would do it like a little bit for one artist, a little bit for another artist. And then,
he really helped you out. He really helped you out. Like,
yeah.
When you're saying he helped you out.
He introduced me to some people who then they really, really helped me out. This guy, this person, B. Fowler, was like another person who like, they were just like, I don't know what I'm going to be doing, but I promise I'll hire you to work in my studio.
Shit, that's super sick.
And that was like the first 2 or 3 years I was down here. I know we were talking about tenants union stuff, but that's how I heard about the tenants union. That was like 2014, 15 was when a lot of anti-gentrification activism was starting in East LA, like Loyal Heights and stuff. And I was working in the art industry and was like, kind of like shocked by how knuckleheaded the response to a lot of the anti-gentrification activism was. Mm. Like people would be like, okay, I get your point, but you're doing it all wrong or something like that. And yeah. I was like, wait, like, I'm sorry, but like these people are right.
Mm.
Or like, what, like, I'm sorry it gets in the way of us doing this like art shit, but at the end of the day, like you're gonna end up displacing families from their homes who've lived in this neighborhood for generations. Like, what is there for you to, like, what hairs are you splitting here? Like, like, I get that, like, it's inconvenient for you, but they're right.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, it's like, to some extent, you can't control a lot of things. Like, you know, I didn't have any control of where I could live once I moved to LA. Like, I stayed in, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyways, the tenants union has become a big part of my life, and that's how I first heard about it, doing that art shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I've been working for this one artist in the same art studio for like 5 years now. We have a really good chemistry, which is kind of like important when you work in somebody's studio. You know, it's like really, you're in their intimate space. You've got to make them feel really comfortable. It's a lot of trust, stuff like that. I mean, yeah, like, now I got my own house, and I don't know, like, I guess it'd be cool to have a kid, but, you know, I think that's, like, you gotta think about, like, the kid first and stuff, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, your friend said, you're gonna die in this band, if you continue to be in this band, come to LA. What do you think made, like, because based on that, I'm assuming your friendship was really, like, intimate and powerful.
Yeah.
What do you think about it, like, kind of, like, what do you think, describe your friendship, like, how did, like, what was it, like, that made you guys close, or that made you, like...
This is, dude, he's one of the most, like, compelling, charismatic, like, kind of fatherly, open-armed figures you've ever met. I mean, think about it. Like,
for
the main thing that, I knew about him, just, like, from, like, Youth Attack Records or whatever, was just, like, when you Googled his name, nothing would come up except for conspiracy theories on message boards about how he murdered Kurt Cobain.
Oh, shit.
And that was, like, only thing that I knew about him, and I was, like, a little crazy or whatever. And we, you know, got along. He just is, like, you know, he's sponsoring a lot of people at AA. So I was talking about all this stuff, and even though, like, I didn't have any drug problems or whatever, obviously was, like, having a bunch of mental things that were hampering me that I didn't even realize. And he talked me through a lot of that shit the same way you would talk to someone who has, like, an addiction. Because underneath all that, there is, like, some fucked up way of thinking. You know what I mean? Like, that's why you, like, I love the Big Book. I love the, like, sort of the ethos of AA, where it's like there is something kind of that you can do proactively if you follow these steps that will have a positive effect in your life. You don't need to believe it or not. You just have faith that it'll work, or like, you don't have to understand it. You know what I mean? And he would teach me all these little tricks or whatever. And it was him and this other guy, B. Fowler, or person, B. Fowler, and they, B. Fowler had gotten over really crazy, like, OCD. I think they still have OCD, but doing cognitive behavioral therapy. And the two of them, like, Callie was, like, my, like, sponsor for something that wasn't a drug problem, and B. helped me get actual medical help from a cognitive behavioral therapist. And between those two things and not having to worry about having a place to live for like over a year, you know, it wasn't like free rent, but dude, I was living in LA for around $250 a month. I mean, I didn't have a shower or a bathroom or a kitchen or anything. Yeah. It was like a futon in the back of like a concrete box, like a warehouse on Skid Row. But still, it was enough to like kind of like get me to like turn the page to like the next chapter of my life.
Yeah. That's super sick. Wow. I think I want to leave it here just because I want people to listen everything. I don't want people to like to listen. But
Yeah.
This is super sick. We're going to do a this or that.
Yeah.
And wrap it up.
Okay.
You know what this or that is?
Yeah. I'm going to go to the bathroom over here. Right? Okay, do you want to pause it?
Let me pause it. No, you were gonna end it, and it would have,
and it would have fucked it all up. It would have made it two things.
Oh, there. All right, back with this or that. Metallica or Slayer? You gotta pick one.
You gotta pick one. I mean,
someone gives you all the Metallica records or all the Slayer records, which are you picking?
I'd probably listen to all the Slayer records.
Okay.
Just because I wouldn't want to listen to anything after the first four Metallica records.
Okay.
Is that, that's probably like most people say that.
Yeah. I mean, most. Orange soda or Coke?
What's that?
Orange soda or Coke? No soda? Not a soda guy?
Maybe Coke.
Maybe Coke.
Just for drinking though?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Death Threat or Hatebreed?
Like Connecticut Death Threat?
Yeah, Connecticut Death Threat.
Can I choose Japanese Death Threat?
This is Japanese Death Threat? I know that.
Alright, I choose Japanese Death Threat.
Trash Harbor Ceremony.
I've never heard Trash Talk.
You never heard of Trash Talk? But you know who they are.
Yeah, I know who they are.
But you never listened to Trash Talk?
No, I've never heard.
That's crazy. That's all right.
And Lee is the homie, too.
Yeah. No, Trash Talk is my favorite band.
Really?
Yeah, probably. Like, everything. That's my favorite band right now. But it's been my favorite band.
Well, cool.
Have
you interviewed Lee?
He won't do it, but...
Really?
But no, like, I've met him. He's super cool. Like, the chill is, like, for how successful he is and how chill he is, like, it's like, oh, this...
Are they still a band?
Yeah. But, like, not, like, really active.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Gauze or Gizmo?
Yeah, I don't know. That's actually hard. I'm not, like, indifferent. Probably Gizmo.
Yeah.
Gizmo. Yeah, actually, what am I talking about? Gizmo, for sure.
Yeah. Do you like black metal? Yeah, right, of course. Yeah, no.
I nodded.
Woods of Desolation? No. Okay. Classic. Dark Throne or Mayhem?
Mayhem. You like black metal?
Huh?
You like black metal?
I love black metal. I love DSBM more. Like, Depressive Suicide of Black Metal, quote unquote. That's the name. But, like, very, like, yeah, you know, like, very, like, sad, like, just, like, what people think of Dead Heaven, like, I've always liked that.
Like, Five Chemical Romance, kind
of. No, like, you know Dead Heaven, right? Yeah, like that, like, very, like, shoegazy, like, just, like, slow, you know what I mean, like, melodic black metal.
Mm.
Yeah, no? Does it sound...
No, but there was a bunch of, there's a lot of black metal on the verge of noise that helped define what a lot of my electronic, what I wanted to,
what was your favorite black metal band, or like top black metal bands?
Of all times?
Or like, are you going to play some black metal, you play that like without thinking that's what I want to listen to?
Maybe some weird Les Legion Noir tape. I don't know. I guess I don't have like a favorite black metal
band. Are you really into black metal?
No, I would say I'm like passively into black metal.
Oh, okay.
But some of those, I think I really like a lot of the Les Legion Noir, like, circle sounding, very lo-fi, a lot of noise. Anything that's sort of, like, a little bit more atmospheric and, there's something interesting going in on it. I think I really like those Moethit tapes, you know? It sounds like a broken violin and, like, an old lady trapped in a well.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. yeah. I mean, I like a lot of stuff that all black metal that kind of sounds like
the noise
hardcore too. You know, like people don't want to say that it does or whatever, but it will. Like, if you listen to bands like GBK, there will be actual two-step parts in it. You know, they don't want to hear that, but
yeah. My Chemical Romance or Paramore.
I've never heard either of those bands.
Oh, shit. Walmart or Target?
Yeah, fuck that shit.
I like this. This has not been the most interesting this or that. Basketball or baseball?
Sports. I don't know. Go Dodgers.
Go Dodgers?
Yeah.
The beach or the woods?
The woodsy beach.
The woodsy beach.
Yeah, like Pacific Northwest style. There's like all these like hemlocks and shit like up on the cliff and then the waves crash.
Like Jason, the first Jason movie, the first Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah, that was a lake technically, right?
Oh yeah. No, I mean, yeah.
But yeah, that idea.
Yeah. Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger?
Oh. Mike Myers. I mean, Freddie himself was, Mike Myers is just kind of classic or whatever. Freddie, the cool things about the cool things about Nightmare on Elm Street are things that don't, that it's, you know, it's not Freddie, whereas Mike Myers is like kind of, it like transcends everything, like, that's the crux of it.
The pinnacle, yeah. I think the last one is My Bloody Valentine or Sonic Youth. Neither?
Maybe Sonic Youth, I guess.
Yeah.
A little bit more going on there, but honestly, I'd rather listen to them do solo stuff or collabs than actually listen to
the
Sonic Youth. Yeah, okay. I'd rather listen to some weird Thurston Moore shit or some I don't know, there was that project she did with Bill Nace was really good too. Maybe it's just a duo.
Alright, the birthday party or Deep Wound? Yeah, that'll be the last one.
Deep Wound?
Deep Wound?
Yeah, or Massachusetts.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Yeah, anything else you want to say?
just that I think it's really cool that you're doing this project or whatever.
Thank
like
you.
I don't know how like zines are dead, you know.
This is the new version of a zine. Yeah, I like to think about it.
Yeah. Also, it's cool like thinking about like, you know, like life goes on, you know, like you do all this other shit or like someone's into like this one.
Yeah, that's
like. Like, yeah. Who knew? Or
yeah,
isn't there crazy.
This is not like I like to think about it like this is not for me. This is like. If I'm interested, like, because in reality, if you look at all my guests, it's, like, very, like, Anthony from Ceremony. Everybody knows Anthony from Ceremony. Then it's, like, my homie who literally, like, just, like, in the back of his house, you know, just interview my homie. But I'm, like...
That's cool. I want to listen to that one.
It's not great because I'm not a great interview at that time, but it's, like, it's just literally my homie. Like, literally just my homie Robert. But I like to think about it from all those guests. Every single one of them, I feel like I'm really interested in that person. I really want to get to know, because I've gotten a lot, like, outside, like, in when I socialize in the real world, I ask too many questions. I ask too many questions, and I like to know about people, and a lot of people get like, what the fuck, like, why do you want to know about this or whatever, which, you know, I understand, but this is my way of, like, kind of playing homage to people who, whether they're popular or not. You know, they're interesting and I want to know.
Do you think your legacy is going to be like, you know, someone who contributed to like the culture of hardcore specifically, or do you think it'll be maybe more having to do with LA, or like when you think about this project, like if it lasted for another 5 years, what form do you think you would like if you could just, you know, God mode control, like what it would be like? Would you still be doing interviews with music? Would you keep on interviewing people from your neighborhood and stuff like that?
I think I would like, I would, if, well, maybe, I guess I'm supposed to put it, if I would say the fan base or fan base, but the like people who will listen to this from years from now, I think it'd be just good-hearted people. Whether you're into music, whether you're into just learning about a certain individual you knew or whatever it may be, it's at the end of the day, the core of it, the avenues were through music and through art and through photography, but the core of it, it's just good people.
Mm-hmm.
I could have interviewed, there's people that are like, oh, interview this person, he'd be sick, you could get him. I'm like, yeah, but I mean, like, the reason this podcast is the way it is because I like to genuinely ask, like, you know, like the way we talked earlier about, you know what I mean? I don't want to talk about, like, oh, how do the lyrics come up? You know what I mean? Like, how did the name come? You know what I mean? I don't want, like, yeah, I get people want to hear that, but I want to hear, like, who's a dude who, like, acts all crazy and hoax and command? You know what I mean? Like, but, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that, to put it bluntly, it's good-hearted people who maybe find this through music or through other avenues, but it's good-hearted people, I guess.
That's cool. I think that if you're this proactive and productive, it's not going to be like the last thing you do. I'm really curious, like, what happens next.
Damn, thank you.
It'll be tight.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, that's a beautiful way to wrap it up.
Sick.